All right, it's 3:02, and it's time to bring the ESAC Subcommittee Waste Diversion Collections and Education to order. Item one, roll call. Bren,
Here.
Margot,
Here.
Trevor,
Here.
and Chris present. We have a quorum. Moving on to item two, the U of A sustainability update. Do you have anything, Trevor?
I do. Let me pull up the right email.
Cool.
Okay. This is just again a recap of weights and diversion figures for our move out activities in May of earlier this year. So it's been a hot minute.
Yeah.
I'll run through these fairly quickly. Campus pantry, so we do collect non-perishable foods for the campus pantry as one of our diversion streams. This year we collected 2,391 pounds, and we were up about 730 pounds from last year.
Wow.
That is one of the
Impressive.
few areas where we saw an increase, unfortunately. But still exciting, almost 2,400 pounds of food to the campus pantry. Suburban miners who we work with to pick up all of the sort of hard goods that can be reused. They picked up in May about 36,500 pounds, which is about 14,500 pounds less than last year. Last year, they picked up right around 51,000 pounds.
Wow.
They also picked up an additional 6,500 pounds in June. So we have what becomes abandoned property, basically items that are left in rooms and stuff. We have to hold that for a certain period of time before we do anything with it in the event it gets collected. They picked up that 6,500. That was about the same as last year. So in total, we're just over quick math, 43,000 pounds, 40 something like that. In total, we're looking at about 45,400 pounds of total materials diverted. That is down from 59,165 pounds last year. We also have trash weights, and so we'll get to diversion in a second, total diversion percentage. Our trash weight was 194,640 pounds, almost 100 tons, and that was up 40,000 pounds from last year, right around 155,000 pounds last year. So our total diversion this year was 19%, which was down from 28% last year. We had a
28%.
very long meeting to try to understand trends, what we did differently, what we were seeing on the ground, all of those sorts of things. We're sort of in a place where we can't figure out what is causing the volatility. The things that went really well don't seem to have made a difference this year. And the things that weren't going well last year, if you all remember, didn't come up this year, but our weights are a lot lower this year. We have more trash, so students weren't keeping more. So we're really not sure what's happening or what students are doing and thinking. We had a lot more different support structures in place this year. We had CDs on board, community directors for each dorm. We're sort of at a loss as to what's driving the volatility and what's working and what's not working because the numbers are changing so drastically from year to year at this point. Fred, you were going to say something. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. You said this is less than 28% last year.
Yeah, 20 last year our diversion rate was right around 28%. This year we're at 19.
So maybe is there a way to do a survey or something to find out from Maybe they just decide to hold on to stuff and
So
not
I
get rid of it.
that's possible. That was one of my questions when we were still waiting on trash weights. Maybe we got less because they kept more. But our trash weights are also up. So for them to keep more means they bought a lot more. For those diversion weights to be down and trash weights to be up, there's a lot more material in the system if that's the case.
What was in the trash?
You name it. It's because we don't have active diversion happening. We put the onus on the students and their families to put things in the right place. You're gonna see anything and everything that you would expect to see in the trash. It's gonna be almost any sort of an electronic, with the exception of refrigerators, which we have to be very careful about keeping out of the trash. You're gonna see furniture, you're gonna see clothing, you're gonna see food. If it's in a dorm room, at some point, somebody probably put it into the trash.
And they don't care about recycling.
Unclear. It is important to remember that about 45% of the university's student body is not from within this state.
Right.
A lot of them are coming from California, where we could assume that things are a little bit better, but probably not that much better. But I believe our next, the next two states that we have the largest number of students from are Texas and Illinois. We have a lot of
Wow.
students from Texas, and
No recycling.
no recycling or
No
very limited,
recycling.
depending on where they're from. I think a function of it is while they do have time, there is a rush, especially if your family's in town, you're trying to get moved out as quickly as possible. And a lot of students are going to wait until the last minute, which just makes that all the harder. This year, we also got information about Dodge the Dumpster into end of year wing meetings. Our dorms are generally split into wings, which are basically just small segments of each dorm that have a resident assistant assigned to it. So they're sort of like the hall monitor slash pseudo parent. At the end of each year, resident assistants are required to meet with their wings, all the students in their wings, to give them information about how to move out, when you have to move out, all of these other things. And this year was the first year where we got information about Dodge the Dumpster incorporated into that. We can't say 100% of RAs pass that information on, but the fact that it was incorporated into wing meetings and we still saw a decrease is really confounding to us.
Do you guys use anything like TikTok or things like that for that?
Because we are a state entity, and the state of Arizona has banned the use of TikTok by all state agencies and employees, we are not
They,
allowed to
they,
use TikTok.
they've banned drinking on campus too,
You can drink in campus if you're on campus if you're over 21,
yeah.
including in your dorm. But
Yeah.
we do use Instagram. We also used dorm specific Instagrams to push that information out. The Office of Sustainability reposted some things. Most of our students are heavily on TikTok, which we have no ability to use though.
Right. So the pro again, the problem was there was nobody standing by the receptacles to say, don't put that in there, put it over there.
Correct.
So you had no monitors.
Correct.
I mean, it just is incredible to think of electronics and all that stuff going into the trash. But
Almost 200,000 pounds of it.
wow, and it probably all worked.
A good majority does,
Yeah.
based on my past experience now almost 7 or 8 years ago, but yeah.
Wow.
So,
So, and the reason for not using monitors was this problem at They have to be cleared in order to be on campus and in the dorm.
That and money. So the biggest barrier for pulling additional folks to do a program similar to how we did the first 2 years way back in 2016 and 2017, I believe, was every single person who is not already an employee of Housing and Residential Life has to have a background check in order to be able to enter a dorm. Those get expensive. If you're not an employee, there are additional risks that come with that. And so often it's easiest to hire somebody in as an employee, which has additional costs because you also have to pay them. And it sort of becomes this spiral of things because of those two factors where you have to keep students safe and it
Sure.
also costs money to pay somebody to be able to do this sort of stuff.
Wow.
How do other universities do this? Do they have the same problem?
Yes, very much so. Dorm move-outs tend to be quite a focus. And quite a large source of waste for universities that have on-campus residents like we do. There are some universities that have extremely, extremely robust surplus programs. So I believe it's Michigan State University has a really, really robust surplus program, and they have a storefront, and they like make things out of things they pull out of classrooms or whatever in order to sell to alumni. Like they go to that level of reuse. I believe they've pretty well incorporated that program into their dorm move out efforts and have a lot greater diversion rates. Not a lot of universities report out specifically on what their diversion rate is around move out. It just gets lumped into the annual, here's what we did for the year. So it's not super clear how successful or unsuccessful other universities are. There are a lot of universities who just put out dumpsters and call it a day. They don't try to recycle, they don't try to do any education. They don't try to divert with a partner like we have in Suburban Miners or previous partners we've had with like Goodwill or Salvation Army or whoever. So there are a handful of universities that are trying to do more in that space, but there aren't too many. And given the university's financial issues right now, it's very difficult to make the case for additional investment.
What's the cost of taking away those, whatever it was, 100,000 tons, 200,000 tons?
Cheaper than diverting.
Cheaper than diverting.
Yeah. Which is the extremely unfortunate part of this, is it is far cheaper for the university to just put out those dumpsters and do nothing than to work with Suburban Miners and try to divert stuff and spend whatever limited time we have we do with staff. Just the economics are going to drive this sort of a thing, and what we have right now is about as good as we're going to get for a little bit.
What about the trash going to the MRF and being, sorted there?
I don't know how much is trash versus what could be salvaged. I mean, the MRF considers even electronics trash. I think that would end up in trash anyway.
Well, I guess what I'm looking thinking is not necessarily to the MRF on one of their work days, but whether there'd be a way to work with them to put it out on a cement floor, and then volunteers or other people would come and pick out the clothing. I mean, I don't know how dirty it is. It needs, it's hard to know in the trash. I mean, you probably don't have much organic garbage going into that. Maybe you do. I would think it would be more, papers and just think, clothing, as you say, electronics, plastic stuff.
Yeah, and I'm honestly not sure what the makeup of of it
What
that
if
you
they
put
just
away.
left the electronics? You told them they could just leave the electronics and
In their room.
in their room.
And they be collected? Well,
Yeah.
Urban Miners goes through and picks up the abandoned stuff anyway.
Yeah.
The challenge with that is students who leave things in the rooms get charged a fee because ultimately somebody has to go back and grab and clean out their room or take the stuff from that room. So I could imagine housing would not be very thrilled with having to go and clean out the electronics from, you know, 1,000 plus dorm rooms.
But
What is
it's
the
school
fee?
districts would like that, some, a way to get in to that, and teachers all have fingerprint cards. So
What is the fee? Just turn some teachers loose. Let them have some of this stuff.
yeah, seriously.
I'm not sure what the fee is at this point, but it applies to any students who there are a lot of different fees. So there are damage fees, there are leaving without checking out with your RA, there are fees for leaving things in your room, and I'm sure that there's a sliding scale associated with like how much you're leaving. Like if you leave all of your things and you make some cleaning up your mess somebody else's responsibility, I'm sure that has a much higher fee associated with it than leaving a few things behind or leaving a dirty refrigerator. I'm
Wow.
not sure.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I guess another approach then is, since there's such barriers to getting involved with the university, is to start talking with some of the other private dorms, whether the diversion could happen there, because surely they have almost as many rooms now as the university does.
Yeah, and we were starting some conversations with them towards the end of the school year last year. They do have a different move out period because, you know, their leases, they have a year-long lease typically, not an academic year. So we had had a few conversations and gave a few pointers, and there was going to be some follow-up, I'm realizing, towards the end of July when their lease periods were ending. But I didn't hear anything back from them, so that's something that I will mark as a to-do.
Thanks for
Because,
trying.
yeah, it's
yeah.
frustrating.
So
The
hopefully
other
it
thing
will.
I could see was some sort of something competitive. So a competitive effort between the RAs with some sort of prize that, I don't know, Kevin Dahl's Rotary Club puts up as a prize of a $200 for the dorm wing person. Dorm wing RA who diverts the most stuff, or
Yeah.
those kids are just out of there.
Yeah,
No, but the RAs have an in if they have an incentive, I mean, they can walk through the dorms and remind people, or they can say to them, just watch you dump that in there. It doesn't go there, it goes over there. I mean, if they were able to somehow, I don't know how you document it, that would be a problem as the implementation, but some sort of using a prize, using a the carrot instead of the stick.
Yeah, that's something that we can definitely think about a little bit more. We have had we do have success with two other on-campus competitions, sustainability competitions. One's called Bennett to Win It, Improving Recycling, and the other one is Less is More. Used to be Battle of the Utilities. It's about reducing utility use, so electric and water use, and they are able to track recycling and contamination rates, as well as, of course, utilities usage, and track that by dorm. The challenge with the move-out infrastructure that we have in place is, bless you, is that several dorms are sharing one large dumpster. We could potentially do it by district, but the challenge there is It's the end of the school year, and rewarding anyone becomes very difficult, especially if we have to wait until August or September to get final weights. But that is something that we can still think about a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, or even by sector. So there
Yeah.
gets to be a, I don't know, a big pizza party for the sector that did the most diversion. I mean, it's crazy because you're, I guess you could do it only for the people who are returning, the returning people from that sector. So
There
if
wouldn't
you're,
be any benefit for the other ones.
no, that's what I'm thinking. Why should
Yeah.
the freshmen be rewarded? They weren't there and didn't participate. But if there was something special for the people, the dorm sector that won, that was for the people who are returning to that dorm, if they would get something. I don't know. I'm just
Like you'd be, have to be a
spinning.
keg party or something. So, I'm sorry.
I don't know what it's an incentive to young people today. So I have I'm not very good at this. All
Okay,
right.
we probably
Is it
need to
is there
move
much?
on.
Well, one quick
Yeah.
thing, is because of all this stuff that's being thrown in the garbage, is there a danger of somebody getting hurt if they go in there and try to get that stuff out? Yes, and so
So
the
it's fatal.
university posts many signs around each dumpster, basically saying, do not get in the dumpster, Arizona law, and we cite some sort of
Okay.
thing, and then UAPD. Just during their normal rounds, they will tell anyone who is around or inside of a dumpster to get out, get away. Precisely because there is a risk and a liability to the university if anyone is getting into those dumpsters, because it's not just paper and clothes, it's also broken glass, mirrors, all sorts of things that could harm somebody.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you
Course.
for
Yep, thanks.
depressing us, but okay, we'll move on. I know you put a lot of effort into it, so really thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you, Trevor.
Yeah.
Thanks for keep trying.
Yeah, item three for waste diversion. Christina, you want to help us out with the MERC report?
Sure.
Thank you.
Let me share my screen. Okay. Everybody see
Yes, thank you.
it? So it looks like, tonnages are staying relatively stable. No big changes. We were down a little bit. We went to a symposium in the Phoenix area, the Circular Arizona Symposium, and there was a presentation from Republic Services. They opened a polymer plant in Las Vegas, and I have a feeling that's where the plastics are going. And that's why we're seeing the 440 for all the plastics. That was going to be my question, because when
Good.
all the plastics have the same value, that says to me they're not sorting them. They're simply putting them all into one bale and sending them to Las Vegas. Circular Arizona's latest newsletter also said that Buckeye was opening a new plant, which was going to process all the materials coming from the Polymer Center in Las Vegas. So I put two and two together and hoped I was coming up with four and not five. That the fact that, and it was also last month in July as well, that must have
Right.
restarted to do that.
So I think so they did the presentation at the symposium, and the gentleman from Republic was saying that they break down the plastics into flakes, and that instead of making the plastics into
the PET into like fleece or benches or whatever, that they're much more in demand because a plastic bottle can then become another plastic bottle or whatever, that they're and that they basically can, pretty much get rid of everything that they generate. It might be good to have them come and talk to us
Oh, that'd be
about
fun.
it. Yeah, that would be good. So,
This new plant that's in Buckeye is being done by Republic, by somebody who's called, I think it's Blue Plastic or something like that. And then also the Arizona Industrial Authority is throwing in some money, and I believe the city of Buckeye. So there was a groundbreaking on the 25th of September, and it'll be up and running next year.
Anyhow, I think that's right. When they talked about it, it just made a lot of sense. Like, okay, that's where that's why everything's the same price.
Right. They're just bundling it all together, and then sorting it out there.
Right.
Was that what Exxon was trying to do? Remember they
I
got
don't.
trouble
Yeah.
with all the pile of plastic.
Yeah, this is different though. They are and they want to take on work on film next, but it's very interesting. I mean,
Good.
they feel like breaking it down and making it into these plastic flakes allows them to use it to create more products than what traditional recycling has allowed them to do.
Well, in the reading that I've been doing in preparation for my class tomorrow, yes, there's that going on. There's the issue is if you do pyrolysis, which is this heating in the absences of oxygen, and you get out a certain kind of oil, there are all the other products, all the other materials that are put into the plastic manufacturing, which then also sort of contaminate the process. And so this way of separating it out by the type of plastic that it is and by color, they made a big point of the color being separated, that then they can have everything prepared so they can make food trays and yogurt cups and all those kinds of things, very much to the specification of the person who wants them.
Yeah. So pretty interesting.
It's of course the fossil fuel industry that is looking for an out as people move to electric cars. So this is going to be their next big where they're going to get used, where that fossil fuel is going to get used, is in this. So they're very much afraid, I think, of these efforts to do away with plastic or to have people not use plastic or no plastic. And when you go to the takeout food from the restaurant and putting it into paper, the petroleum industry is saying, no, keep the plastic. We're just going to do a better job at recycling it. So I think that's some of the pressure they're feeling.
Yeah, but we're still not. I mean,
Yeah, I know. We're
it just
small
in
amount.
Tucson. Yeah, in Tucson. I mean, if anything, there's been so much negative media talking about how, recycling doesn't really happen, and only 8% of the plastics you think you're get recycled. And so people, we see it. We see less and less.
Less and less
And
being recycled, you mean?
Less and less people put, our tonnages are dropping
Yeah, because of the
slowly.
recycling. Yeah.
See a
Well,
lot of cardboard.
yeah, I bet. Okay.
So just as an FYI on this one, we actually did have our audit today.
Oh, okay.
Ernesto gave me a preliminary report. We processed about 78 tons, which was a little bit lower. And he thinks that he said he thought that the residue looked like it was fairly low, but we've said that before, and it doesn't necessarily pan out. He said that in one of the bales for paper, somebody had put like a whole bag of poop.
Oh.
Yeah, it's, So we'll see, Anna, when we get the official report. But yeah.
All right.
Do they look again at the what they call residue as to whether they're recyclables that they missed?
Yeah, they've gotten, better at that. It's still within the amount that's allowable, the 5%.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right, and then you're next up for item four for the public outreach.
Right. I will tell you, we are starting to be very, very busy.
I see.
We have two events this weekend. One is we're going to do some presentations to the different neighborhood association leadership, and then they're doing a food cycle at home training at the zoo.
It's what you're doing, what?
The food cycle at home
Okay.
training at the zoo. We have a public meeting tonight, where we have on South 10th Avenue, the container maintenance site. Housing is planning to do affordable housing there. The neighborhood has traditionally been very leery of any kind of development around there because of the history related to urban renewal and because of the issues, because it was a transfer station. They believe that there's contamination at the site. We don't we the testing we've done, it does not show that, but they really don't believe that that's the case, so we shall see how that goes. But we'll be there with the consultant team that did the assessments. So that's tonight. We do We've got a couple of Halloween-related outreach programs coming up. We're getting asked to do some recycling training. We have a number of them. The Armory Park Neighborhood Association, Ward 2, has asked us to do one. A couple of businesses have asked us to come out. So we're going to be pretty busy. We're going to do a presentation for Margot's class. So. And then we have the Halloween tour coming up.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're pretty much busy through November.
Well,
And then we
thank
have the
you.
zero waste event coming up November 2nd.
Okay. Well, that's plenty. All right. It's all good. It's really good stuff you're doing, Christina. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. Brittany, are you helping?
Yes, I'll be at some of the events that we have coming up. All
Yeah, I
all
figured.
of our staff will be, so.
I figured you would. Oh, yeah. Well,
Does that include your daughter?
she'll be at the Zero Waste event.
Yes.
All right.
Just
So,
FYI, I'm going to mention to you all, the
what?
Brush and Bulky's been behind about a week.
Yeah.
That's on the agenda for Jose.
Okay. Oh, for Jose, sorry. I'll let you
Yeah, so
guys
that's
talk about
coming up. That's next.
But if you want to take over, go ahead, Christina.
We'll give you some of the fun, Jose. Is that all right?
No problem.
Okay. Anything else, Christina, or should we move on?
I'm done, and I have to drop off for a meeting at 4, so.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to item five for collections and then brush and bulky, because I know neighborhood associations have been trying to calm down residents. So.
Yeah, so like Christina was saying, yeah, we're actually running about a week, like a week and a half, we're running behind. So just so that you guys kind of get the picture of it, like this week, we just started last week's area. So that's why we're saying kind of a week and a half. So back in July, you know, we had the perfect storm where, you know, the monsoon had to do a lot with it. So what happened there is that the area that we were working at and other areas around the city of Tucson, you know, we were getting many calls where they needed assistance to pick up some, you know, the downed trees, vegetation. So what happened is that, you know, we took it, we went out there and we cleaned up some of these areas, mainly where it was hit pretty hard. So what happened is that, you know, that made us run behind. Not only were we trying to take care of the area that we were in, we also had take care of, you know, the stuff from the monsoons. Plus, and then when you start adding some of the equipment, you know, we didn't have the equipment to take care of some of this stuff. And then personnel, trying to get personnel, you know, to come in and help out. You know, we were dealing with the personnel that, you know, we have them scheduled. So that kind of, you know, set us back a little bit. And I mean, we've been trying, you know, we've been working Monday through Saturdays. Some of these guys, you know, they do take some time off. One of the things that we're doing is that Carlos is we have a memo that will be going out to the mayor and council. Once we receive that mayor and council, once it's been approved, what happens is that we're gonna notify the department, and basically we're gonna be mandating some of the employees to come in and, you know, working. And when I say mandating the employees, it's not only our employees, we have the mechanics that will be working also, you know, so we can have the equipment to finish up. Usually when we have crews out on the areas, you know, we'll have anywhere from 6 to 7 or 8, depending on the amount of personnel that we have. We can have up to 8 crews out there. But that being said, you know, we're usually trying to, you know, with those 8 crews, you know, we're sending them out doing all these other cleanups that we have to do when monsoon hits. So, you know, and back in 2021, we had the same thing. We were running that one. We're running, I think, like 3 weeks behind, just because of the significance of difference, you know, from each cycle. Usually on cycle two, that's where we're at now. It usually bumps up the tonnages. So not only the tonnages, not only the it was just a perfect storm that happened all the way around. Going back to that, so what we did last time is that we sent out notices to all the employees. So what happened, it was a department, they wanted to come in on overtime. Some of the, you know, we had mechanics out here working with us. It
Oh,
doesn't take
cool.
much. Yeah, it doesn't take much to run a rig. So
Yeah.
you know, yeah, we had supervisors were on the skid steers. We had
you know, they were running the skitzers, they were running the rear loaders. We had, you know, a lot of participation from the front office. We had our customer service reps. They were coming out and helping us. So in 3 weeks, you know, we were running three areas behind 3 weeks, but we ended up catching up. You know, we were doing 10, 11, 12 crews we were sending out there, but we ended up catching up. So basically that's what we're going to be doing this time, this go around. And hopefully, you know, within 3 weeks, once we get everything approved, we give everybody a 2 weeks notice, let them know what's going on. You know, we have, the guys are pretty good about coming in. Once they're mandated, they're pretty good about coming in. For some of those that can't come in, you know, they'll come in the following week. So we work with the employees to make sure that, you know, that they're putting their share also. But yeah, I somebody was mentioning today earlier in the day that I guess it was in the news that we were running behind. Yeah, and it is true, but hopefully, you know, we can get that everything taken care of here. And we're hoping that in less than a month, we'll be able to get back on track.
Jose, you're not doing B&B Plus yet, though, are you?
No, the B&B Plus, basically what happened, we lost the Brush and Bulky Plus.
Okay.
Because we had our inmates that were coming out here, and there were, okay. That was our, back then, you know, we had our inmates, but now that we no longer have them, is basically we, those guys that we did have for B&B Plus, now we're doing the homeless camp cleanups.
Okay, because people have been asking me what happened to B&B Plus.
Yeah, it basically
might need to set something out.
Okay. Yeah, that basically fell apart once we lost, because, you know, our thing was for the inmates. The inmates were helping us out, so we were working back and forth. But mm-hmm. Once COVID hit, we lost them. And, yeah, we didn't have enough personnel, because we had up to, sometimes, that's, you know, we had up to 60 inmates that were working out here with us and helping us out. So, yeah, and then trying to get full-time employees, you know, at ESWs. That's where we're just trying to get the vacancies.
Okay.
But we still do extra, you know, cleaning of illegal dumps with the personnel that we have now. You know, we've hired a couple of ESWs, and I think I mentioned in the past where they're, you know, it's working out great. They come in, they're helping us out, you know, with the brush and bulky, the homeless camp cleanups. And then, you know, they get the opportunity to get their CDLs. Right now we have five employees that are on standby, so we can move them over so they can become drivers.
Okay. Well, thank you for all the work you guys are doing.
And we're getting there. We won't fail this. So, I mean, we've gone through this back in the past, and we, you know, we did pretty good about it. So we feel that we're hopefully in the works time, we'll be back up on track.
Great. Okay. Any questions for Jose?
Is he going to talk about the alley vegetation?
Yeah. Moving on to the alley vegetation.
Yes. So back in, we set out a request for proposals. It's called Vegetation Management Services for Refuse Collection and Alleys. So we set out a request for a proposal. We had a couple of companies that reached out to us. You know, they submitted their proposals. And, you know, back in August, we had, we received the proposal, and then we have five city employees that reviewed the solicitations. And back in August, they went over them, you know, going over what are some of the pros and cons of what they submitted. So they're going to be here in September. We should be finalizing and, you know, coming down to who's going to be the number one that's going to be helping us out. So what we did for this solicitation, they're going to be helping us out with some of the alley cleanups. Right now, we do have two crews that are, you know, they're arborists that are out there, you know, maintaining some of these alleys. But, you know, one of the things that the department did, that they wanted to have companies, you know, help us out, because there's there's a lot of valleys that we have. Let me see, what is the let me see, I think I had it on here. Where is it? Hold on just 1 second. We have approximately 33,000 out of 140,000 households currently receive refuse and B&B service in the alleys, abutting their properties. Providing refuse services in the alley requires routine vegetation management and maintenance activities. So that's a lot of alleys for our two crews to take care of. So hopefully, you know, once we get the number one award, if it gets awarded to number one, number two, you know, we can use the companies to help us out for some of these alleys. Right now we do have some of the employees that are reporting some of these alleys. You know, there's a lot of alleys that we probably need to get out of. Yeah. Just because of the how small these alleys are, you know, we start looking at, you know, the trees, the vegetation, you know, we were looking at the gas meter, water meters, anything that's, you know, interfering with in order for us to do our job back, you know, in the when we got the side load. So they're identifying a lot of these alleys to see if we can get out of them or if it's just something that we need trimming. Right now, the supervisors, they're going out there and they're actually driving through all the alleys that we have. And we're identifying where the work is needed. You know, if we need to pull out of the alley, you know, so we can make it a safer for the operators. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, so here in September, we you know, we finalize everything, or actually the five employees that are actually, you know, reviewing the solicitation, we can come to an agreement that and award the proposal that we set out.
What was the number on the alleys again, Jose?
Approximately right now we services over 300, we service over 140,000 households per week, and then yeah. Brush and bulky collection service 5,300 households per week. What was the question again?
How many alleys? I remember you said an alley number at the beginning, I thought.
The way we have it on here is approximately 33,000 out of the 140,000 households, 17% okay. Currently receive refuse and B&B service in the alley.
Okay. And do you guys try to get that change to where everybody gets a blue barrel and a green barrel to put out in front of their houses?
Well, actually, when it comes down, once we switch it over, say we, you know, we identify an alley that's, you know, that we need to get out of, they already have the recycling up in the front. So what we do, we'll provide them a new container so that way they can set out in front of the driveway. Out on the street, so they do have both containers.
So do you ever see a time when you're just going to phase all the alley pickups out, or,
you know, if it's one of those things that, you know, we'd like to, but that's going to consist of more employees, more routes, okay. More equipment. Yeah, so that's, you know, it is in the talk, but it's going to take some time. We got to make sure that we're budgeted for the equipment and employees.
Okay.
Right. I had thought of maybe you guys can set up a dumpster somewhere so that they can, if those alleys that aren't serviceable, you're not able to work in there, you put a dumpster somewhere where they can drag whatever it is that they need to put in there into the dumpster. But there seems to be, like, there's a lot of unscrupulous workers who landscape companies, so that we'll just go ahead and dump all their stuff, their loads into those dumpsters instead of taking them to the landfill where they have to pay for it.
Yeah, and you know, and we do have requests from neighborhood associations where they do a community cleanup. One of the things that, like you were saying, Alfredo, is that, you know, we will deliver the container. You know, you have the residents that are using it, but then you have other people that see a container like, oh, look, there's a container there. You know, They're not going to put it inside the container. They're going to put it outside of the container.
We have that. We've had, I think it's twice a year that we've been able to do that. And we do have problems with we just throw stuff. If the container's full, they'll just throw stuff on the outside of it, which makes it hard for, because then they got to pick up. I mean, there were some, the last time there were some really huge tires out there that, like, tractor size tires.
Yeah.
And so they had to get a special a thing to pick them up and throw them away.
Yeah, and usually, you know, we're the ones that are picking those up. You know, if it's extra large tire or something where, you know, they're heavy, we'll send out a rear loader and basically, you know, load up just the tires, you know, with skids here. So, yeah, we do end up taking that. Yeah, like I said, they just, people don't understand that, okay, it's just for your, you know, for the neighborhood. As soon as they see a container, like, ooh, that's.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I know. But you know, to be honest with you, I think even though there are some people who do take advantage of the program, but I tell you, we use it twice a year here, and it's very helpful for us, and it's very well received. I don't think you'll be able to do it this year because they closed our park down. It's all fenced off, and so it's going to be really difficult to maybe do that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we've also thought in the past is, you know, instead of setting out a roll off out there, you know, designate a point like an empty lot or somebody that's willing to, you know, basically donate that lot. And it's like, hey, everybody just go dump your stuff out there, you know, in that lot. Yeah, it's going to create illegal dumping, but at least, you know, we can have a truck out there that can take care of, instead of, you know, delivering that roll off, you know, we can send a crew out there that's going to service it with the from the brush and bulky.
Well, I think the problem with that, though, is that, you know, once you pick it up, they'll probably think, well, we could just put that stuff there all the time. I think that creates another problem, because then you're going to have to go out there and pick it up all the time, because people are just going to arbitrarily think, oh, this is a good place to put it, because they'll come by and pick it up for us.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Yeah, it's.
You know, I find that very disturbing, because, you know, I hate when they take advantage of what, you know, what your job, you know, your job is to, you're designated to do certain areas at, you know, certain parts of the year. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it happens, but I don't think that would be a good idea to just let people just dump stuff, because you're going to end up with a problem with people just, you know, it's trash being there all year round.
Yeah.
Well,
you're exactly right.
Well, Garden District's getting their dumpsters on Thursday, so, and we have a lot of renters, and so it'll probably be filled with mattresses, and that's a good thing.
Okay, make sure you just let us know. I'm pretty sure if there's anything on the ground, you know, we'll take care of it.
Oh, you guys have helped. You know, at times we've had people from the neighborhood sit by the dumpster, and that was when we were a lot younger. So for some reason, we just can't get those youngsters out there anymore. So.
Yeah.
So I wanted to thank Jose for my new garbage can. It was really okay still, but all of a sudden a new one showed up that has numbers and is a nice color. Mine was so faded and a little torn. So.
Oh, okay, we probably had one of the operators probably reported. I don't know if it was broken or a wheel fell off of that. I'm not sure. So I'm glad that somebody was doing their job by, you know, reporting the container and switching it out for you.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jose. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item 6 for the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. And that's you, Frank, right?
Yes.
There you are. Hi, Frank.
So I was gonna ask you, all right. Did you have the data?
For?
Bring it up, Brittany.
What, I'm sorry, Frank. No, I don't have that. Did you email it to me?
what's the sound of talking?
Mute myself. Sorry, I was muted. It's in the cloud in that Los Reales Sustainability Campus performance indicator folder.
Can I share? Can I give you co-host ability and can you get there?
Sure.
All right, let me make you the co-host.
Make me the co.
All right, you just have to accept it. And then you should be able to share your screen on behalf of Frank.
Okay, so I created this data. Can you see it or not? Do I have to change screens?
Not yet. So did you accept being the co-host?
I said okay.
And then you'll have to share your screen. So on the bottom, there's an up arrow that says share. Select the share screen, and then you would select the window that you want to share.
I'm not seeing the share part.
It's on the bottom where the participants, the chat, reaction, share.
Oh, there it is. Sorry. there it is.
Sure.
Is that good?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe a little bigger. Can you just tiny, tiny bit bigger? But
oh. For me, it seems big. I don't know how to make this bigger.
Okay. I think you, if you hit control plus or your plus sign on the screen.
Oh, no. Stop sharing. Sorry. I don't know how to do this. Let's try again. That'll be the screen, and then we're going to, don't need the new tab. Share.
Oh, that's okay. We can get up closer.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, we'll just get up closer. Thank you.
Then we go 1:30.
Yeah, I got it at 1:30.
Let me go bigger.
Does that work? That's at 1:50.
That's better.
That's good.
Okay. Yes. Sorry.
So we have Cassandra put together all this data, and I think we're just trying to figure out exactly what ESAC would like to see. If you look on the far left, we've got the refuse and the total tons that have come in. Probably want to scroll down a little, Cassandra, to like 2020, where are we, August 24th. And this is on, you have it for calendar, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're looking at January 24?
Yeah, August of 24.
We have June.
Can you see that?
Yeah, I have this year. So yes. January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August. I'll do September. By Friday, I'll have that in there.
So you can see that so far through August, you've already brought in 73,000 tons of refuse.
Oh, okay.
And then we also have compost, the food that has come in, food waste, the zoo do. Any diversion that we might do on human waste, which we did in March, we did that one grinding event, which was 864 tons that we ground up. And then the actual compost that leaves our facility after it's been processed and tested. And that compost is going to currently to the neighborhood gardens. So we've actually sent out 33 tons.
It looks really good. Anytime I I drive by and I see the piles around different places in the city. So Ward 2, Ward 6.
Perfect. Have you actually picked some up yourself?
Huh?
Have you actually picked some of it up?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good stuff. I was telling my sons to keep something in their cars.
Sure.
Stop and fill it up. So.
So on the far right, we've got the household hazardous waste information from total participants for the year. Any kind of shipments is the waste that actually is shipped off site for disposal or recycling. And then also the Small Business Waste Assistance Program, which is the businesses that bring us the commercial waste for disposal.
What is the SBWAP?
The Small Business Waste Assistance Program.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the number of customers. So you have four customers. So they put in 300 pounds apiece.
And that was just for August.
So let me make sure I understand. The LRSC is the Los Reales count. And then the collection count is the actual number of items or pounds or what?
Where LRSC counts, that is the customers that actually came to the landfill site drop off HSW.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
The 440 is the participants that went to our outreach.
Okay. Oh, the collection count is the Saturday special collections.
Correct.
Yeah.
Second Saturday, well, not second Saturday, but yeah, Saturday.
And the Sweetwater pounds is the number of pounds you're sending away from Sweetwater?
Site, correct. For disposal, which is around 59,000 pounds. And the collection pounds are the total pounds that we actually collected at the Saturday.
So that's what you've gotten on the Saturday. And then you've taken it to Sweetwater, and then that's where it's being shipped out from, or?
No, sorry. I'll interrupt you, Frank, sorry. Sweetwater is what's been collected here at Los Reales and then shipped over to Sweetwater to process and then shipped out. The collections pound is what our contractor has taken after it's been bulked and collected at the collection itself.
So 440 people came in August, and the material that was then going to be shipped off site was 2,736 pounds.
Yes, that's how much the contractor took from the product collected that day.
Okay, and what happened to the rest of it?
If it's small quantity, then it gets taken to ship to Sweetwater to be bulked up with the rest of the stuff that we've collected and then shipped out of there.
Okay, so that's why Sweetwater is only only a certain number of times.
Correct.
Other times there's zero because there wasn't enough little stuff having been assembled to do something with it.
Yes.
Okay. So I thought we had abandoned Sweetwater, but obviously we're still using it as kind of what, a transfer point or a, what would you call it?
No, Sweetwater has not been abandoned and we haven't actually closed it down. We cannot do any consolidation here at the landfill. So because we don't have a hood and we don't have, but it's not permitted yet to be able to do that. That's why the Sweetwater site is so open, but it's open for only our internal operations.
Okay.
We're not open for the public anymore at that site.
So the facility that you're building for household hazardous waste at Los Reales, When that's completed and functioning, then Sweetwater will go away.
Yes, so the plan is then to close down the Sweetwater facility for our internal operations, and everything will be operated out of here, the Loceanas Sustainability Campus.
Okay. Where is the contractor taking the stuff that they're hauling away?
Well, it goes to their facility up in the Phoenix area. And then from there, it depends on the type of material. Then it might get shipped off out of state to an incinerator or a treatment facility, a recycler, for example, if it's paint, it's latex paint. Mm-hmm. So there are different, there's just different destinations for each waste stream.
So there's a big, there's a transfer point. I remember a long time ago, 30 some years ago, visiting it in Phoenix. And that I guess is where they brought all the things from all around. And I guess that's where Tucson is sending their stuff to the transfer, that transfer station, which was set up like a mini little, like a mini household hazardous waste site. I mean, it was bermed all the way around. It had big tanks where they could put, you know, acids and alkaline in, and then, you know, so they neutralized each other, and they had storage sheds for other stuff. And so I guess that's where it's going still.
Yes, it may not necessarily be the same one that you're talking about, because each contractor, they might have their own facility.
Oh, okay.
One facility for all contractors. Each contractor, they manage their own. So it might just be the same concept, but just a different location.
Yeah, so it's a bigger business than it used to be. Okay.
Oh, right.
All right.
Okay. Any questions? Is that everything, Frank?
That is everything I have, yes.
Okay. No, that's a lot. Thank you.
That's the HHW expansion update?
Actually, operations, LRSC operations.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I'm going to share my screen.
Okay. All right.
Let me make you a co-host, Frank. Okay, you should be able to accept now.
Okay, good. All right.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
Which one are you seeing? I'm trying to figure out. I just want to update you that I don't think I have yet, but in the previous few months, we've acquired two pieces of an excavator, which is a 352.
Nice.
We actually haven't had an excavator at this facility for many, many years, probably over 20 years. But we figured out that with this excavator, we're actually going to be more efficient, and we're going to be able to stop paddling the cover soil that we use for the landfill twice. So we'll only be able to only handle it once, and then it goes and gets placed as cover material. Whereas before, we'd have to use one of our dozers to actually cut the material, the soil, and then we'd have to use a loader to load it onto the haul trucks. So at this point, with the excavator, we'll excavate it once, put it in the haul trucks, and then take it to its destination. Then the second, I'm going to start doing this one and show you the other one. So this is the second one, and it's a smaller, it's a 930 loader. And we traded in one of our bigger ones that was older, a 980. But this one, it actually has different attachments. So we'll be able, not only does it have a bucket, but it has forks, so we can use it as a forklift. And it also has a different bucket with it's called a thumb. So we'll be able to use it also to load tires or other bulky materials that this machine will be able to grab them and then load them into roll-off containers. And so we can also use this one to, in our compost area, to load compost. If we needed to move some or load some soil, we could, we'll be able to do that as well.
A nice looking toy.
Yeah.
So that's all I have on operations. I just wanted to update you some of these pieces of equipment. Do you have any questions?
No, thank you. I'm glad to see you're getting some new trucks. So
yeah.
That's fun.
Thank you, Frank.
Sure. Then the last picture that I want to share is actually of the HSW renovation. It is actually, we have our certificate of occupancy. So we started to move in our equipment so that we can start processing, and we're going to dismantle our temporary site. Which our temporary site was very hard to work with. It was just a bunch of Connex roll-off containers in a circle, basically, just where we can store material. So now that we have this facility, we'll be able to start using it. As you can see, it includes, on the right-hand side, it includes the storage containers. They're called safety storage. And that's where we would store the hazardous materials, like acids or bases, any kind of oxidizers or pesticides separately. So they are self-contained, and they also have their own fire extinguishers and fire sprinkler systems. Then on the left of the screen is our fluid. And that's where we'll be able to process and mix materials so that we can put it in 55-gallon drum and then ship them off site. So this is what we did not have at the site, and we have at Sweetwater. So as soon as we can't use it yet, but as soon as we have our air quality permit revised, then we can start using it. So it wouldn't be more than maybe the next couple of months that we're going to be fully operational and completely housed here at the lab site.
Nice.
Okay.
Any questions for Frank? I think you did it.
Okay. And I will be, because I have to go to that meeting too that we have at 5:30. So thank you.
Okay. Thanks. All right. And okay, last but not least, Martina, are you still here for item 7, code enforcement?
And oh, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Now we can briefly start with the numbers for the multiple violations. The first one on the section is going to be for
Martin. Yes. I'm going to make you a co-host so you can share your screen and have those numbers up for the members.
You got it. All righty. Just walk me through it, okay?
Okay. You're a co-host. You should be able to accept it. And then on the bottom there's a share screen option. Once you click on that, you can select the window that you want to share.
Okay, and when you accept it, where is that at? I'm not seeing
it.
That
should be on the top of the screen, the top of the Zoom screen.
Oh, okay, maybe. Yeah, I'm not seeing a share up there.
Okay,
I'm sorry, an exception. I'm not seeing that up there.
Just say okay.
All right, I'm going to resend it to you. So on the top there, it should say Brittany wants to make you a co-host. It should be just like a little pop-up button on the top. Okay.
You know what oh, my lordy, lordy, lordy. I'm trying to do this with one finger here out in the field. And I think I'm blocking it with my Zoom, and I'm not seeing the okay part. I'm sorry. I got that screen. All right, let me see if this will work. Hold on, I'm sorry.
No luck?
No luck.
Okay. Mine shows that he's already a co-host. I don't know if it's in the list.
Okay, maybe for some reason you have accepted it already, so go ahead and see if you can share your screen.
You're gonna...
So...
I completely got out of that. Oh my God. Let's see. I squirreled down and I completely took you off the video also.
Fun with Zoom. Is it something that you could just email us or Brittany? Like with the numbers?
Yeah, if he can't show it up on the screen, I'll have to email it.
Okay.
To you.
Okay, I apologize.
That's fine. We've all been through it.
Okay. I'll be brief and as clear as possible. The first section is for multiple violations like trash and debris, hoarding, permits, zoning, setbacks, etc. Also with junk motor vehicles. For the month of September, ending September, we had 830 cases. 687 were active, and 143 of those are in citation. And keep in mind, these are multiple violations. And if you break it down to the next section where we'll start with the resolved cases are 256 total. Junk motor vehicles was 36, and the weeds were 220. And then we got the unfounded cases, the ones that where we roll out there. We still do it. We do an inspection still, but we find that there is no violation. They cleaned it, or it's just one of those anonymous complaints that came in that wasn't true. Those unfounded cases was 153 total. We had 20 reports of junk motor vehicles and in 133 of weeds. So the total between the resolved and unfounded were 409. Now we also got a section where we just do, this will break down the weeds and the junk motor vehicles only. The active cases were 160, 24 junk motor vehicles, and 136 of weeds. And the citation just for junk motor vehicles and weeds were 11 junk motor vehicles and 21 in weeds. And that would be a total of 192. And also keep in mind that we refer just the junk motor vehicles, we refer them over to TPD or the CSOs, the community officers. And they had, we had referred them over 330 of just the junk motor vehicles.
And I know that they're not real quick on getting all those taken care of.
Yeah,
they've and got the bad thing, other jobs.
Yeah, they got more first responding, more priorities, emergencies and stuff, which is understandable. But the problem is with when we send them, we know the number, how much we referred to them, but we don't got a way to we don't got the database to see how many were abated, how many were addressed. Unfortunately, me and Lori, we're trying to look at some way where we can do that. We're still working on that. That way, at least we can give you how many were abated on those that we referred over to them in the future.
Yeah, that was always the problem with having the CSOs take over.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, the junk motor vehicles, and they were doing weeds too, and they got so far behind. So,
yeah, they pulled away the weeds from them, and they decided just to do the junk motor vehicles.
Okay.
Then we got I went all the way down to, I'm not going to go through all of them, but all the way down to 2021 and 2020, I looked for some other ones that were there. And keep in mind, these are probably abated, but those are back when we used to use Permit Plus. And then when we interchanged with Intergov, we lost a lot of them where we can't go in there and look at these TDV numbers no more because of the Permit Plus is non-existent for us now. But on 2021, it showed we had 41 total that were active and 18 still in citation. And then in 20, we had 33 total that were, 8 were active and 25 were in citation. But like I said, I've been going out there and trying to, you actually have to go per address one by one. So as our staff is, you know, we're pretty limited with how many inspectors we got. So I've been going out there and trying to pick 3 or 4. And I would say all the ones that I did, 90% of them were already abated.
And what kind of problems?
And these were like different violations for weeds or junk motor vehicles or some storage in the front. And like I said, the only way to find out is by going by the address and then trying to go out there and see what the violation was. But a big percentage of them were already abated. So we got to figure out a way how we can remove them from the system so it doesn't show that they're still open or in active status. And me and Lori,
I go to Neighborhood Support Network and we get there's lists of all the code enforcement reports and violations for all the neighborhood associations. I don't know if you've ever seen that. And if you haven't, I'll send it to you because I was just going through the Garden District one. And one of the problems we're having is there's no follow-up on people who have done things in their yards without permits. So you guys have come out and said, hey, you have to do this, you have to fill out the forms, you have to get everything taken care of, and they're not doing it. And so some of these cases are going to go back a couple years and they're still in violation. And so that kind of gets some of the neighborhood people uptight because, you know, we don't live in HOAs. We depend a lot on you guys to help us out with that. So
what is it called, Chris?
It's the Neighborhood Support Network. It was put together by Don Ijams, who used to work for TPD, and he did a great job, and someone else is taking over. And I'll just send you the site because this is what people residents use, you know.
Okay, that'll be great.
Could you send that to me, Chris?
Can
you send that to me too?
Don't have that? Okay, because what it has is the first part of it has all the police calls for the neighborhood, and then the next section is all the code enforcement information for all the neighborhood associations in Tucson. And so it's something that has really helped us out because it is hard to find, especially now that you guys switched to Intergov and things that are still bothering people are still out there, like me. So,
a lot of times, like for permits, when we go out to a electrical or some kind of structural damage, we were having like a gap between us and development services.
Yeah.
They weren't seeing the notes. They were going in there obtaining permits for other things than what we were requesting for. But we sat down a month ago with development service with Ernie Stevens, and we're in the process of doing a couple things different. So when we do a violation for electrical or a hazard, we're putting notes in a certain section where they can copy and paste it and put it into the permits, into their permits. So when that person comes, they can read our notes now so that they can go ahead and address it with them and tell them, no, you know, you're showing that you have some electrical damage at this property. That's the permit you need to obtain. So right now we're in the process of working together to try to get some kind of system where we're not losing those, like you said.
Okay. And then I keep bugging Dan Bursick with PDSD that I don't think it should be code enforcement's job to take care of all the permitting stuff. So look, I've been hassling them about this for a lot of years. So I think they just need to hire people to do that, because it just takes away from a lot of other things as well, as you know.
It does the research and all that.
Hours of the day. Yeah, it takes a lot of research, and you know, they've got all that stuff and they could take care of it. So
but I think this, the way we're gonna do it this time, it's gonna work, yeah. At least help it, put it that way.
What's Ernie's last name again?
Stevens.
Stevens, okay. All right. You know, because the thing is, you know, they've got all the training, and it takes, you know, inspectors like you that have been with code enforcement for a long time to understand all the stuff that's going on. And
I understand completely. So hopefully we resolved it, at least got it a little better, so we can at least try to get it nipped right away. At least most of them.
I'd like to see that when you guys get that all organized. That'd be cool.
Once it gets done, maybe I'll set up something where we can bring it up in one of our meetings again.
Okay, that'd be great. Okay.
Well, that's all I got for that one, but I also got
the Viva update.
Yeah, I got the Viva update. Currently, we're working on three locations. We got a 6200 Campbell. And right now, they're like in the maintenance phase. They're really complying. And actually, it looks a lot better. We're in the forward progress. The management is real positive, and they're engaging with the inspector, and they're trying to get this resolved. So that one looks very good. We've been working on that for quite a while, but it is moving forward, and they're being real proactive on that location.
Good.
The other one would be 22nd and Prudence. That one, unfortunately, is in litigation. And after all that going on, after the litigations, you know, the owner and his team have they engage with code enforcement after the pursuing of citations and the fines. So that one's starting to become a real positive. And the management also there has hired a contractor to start fixing the problems that they're having that weren't under permit. They've hired an architect. They're doing the drafting. So on that one also, it's a very positive outcome on that one. We're really pushing them to get that resolved. So that one's pretty good too. The other one would be Grant and Alvernon. That one also.
Yay.
That one also. that was a hard one. That one's still a little harder, but that one's also in litigations. And that one also, believe it or not, they're starting to, after all the problems we had, they're pretty positive, and they're engaging with the inspector real good and trying to do positive actions. Sometimes it takes, you know, a lot of pushing, but eventually they'll get it. They unfortunately have a bunch of permits that they have to obtain. They've applied for them already. And some of them are ready to be closed and issued for the repairs. So they've already bought the material to do the repairs on the fascias and all the violations that they had. But they're not doing nothing until we get it all approved and issue status. But they're aware that we're around and that they need to start taking care of these properties.
Where do you know what's the address for that? Do you know?
The address, is on Grant and Alvernon. I can get you the exact address and get it back. I'll email it to you.
Okay. That's a mess anyways with the
Grant. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
But the good thing, we're working together to get the repairs done. And obviously it took a while, but it is a positive. We're going in the right direction. And then the last one will be where we just had a meeting this morning, and that one's going to be off of First and Fort Lowe. We still don't got all the details yet. We met up with TPD, the CSOs, Sherpa, the attorney, with multiple departments, and we're trying to find how we can address this. I advised them that, you know, it's hard for us because we are limited with employees. We're at 8 to 10 employees. Mm-hmm. So it really pulls back from our regular inspections because these really take a long time. And we talked about that. So we're going to try to help them as much as possible. Carlos, the director, is really working hard to try to get us our new employees. I'll talk about that at the next meeting and let you guys know what the status is. But okay. We just got to keep in mind that I'm out there doing inspections. I got my area still, and I'm out there trying to help the guys out for they won't be so overwhelmed. But hopefully when all that gets done with the employees, I'll talk to you guys again next month, and I'll let you guys know on the status on all that stuff. But that one is located off of Fort Lowe and First. It's still in the working progress. I'll keep you guys in touch on how that's going to work out, and then we can go from there.
Okay. No, that's...
Because they also have a big wash. They have a big wash by there, I believe it's by the cemetery. And TPD is really adamant on seeing if we can get that addressed. We had a miscommunication. We thought it was a private wash. And after all the research we've done, we found out, I believe, that they sold it to the city. So, which is good for us, because now that we know that we own it, now we can take some more steps on getting that high vegetation trimmed down for the TPD, for they can go in there and see what's going on in all those bushes. But like I said, I'll let you guys know as soon as I know all the details on that one, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. So are you guys, you're at 10 employees? What's your total code enforcement?
Yeah, we have 10, we got 2 in vans, and then so hopefully we'll get the other 5 pretty soon. Carlos is really working hard to get us that. He's been real good with that, very diligent to take care of that.
Oh, good. Okay, so you're getting a couple back.
Hopefully it all worked out in the end.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Okay. Good. That's good to know. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I apologize about this computer stuff.
You'll get it.
All right. Thank you again.
All right. All right. So here we are. We're just a little bit past. Future items for next meeting. Anyone?
Yes, we wanted to hear from the Republic person about what they're doing with this plastic, and are they taking it to Las Vegas, and then what are they doing with it there, and is it then going to Buckeye?
Okay. With their plastic. Anything else, Fred?
Can't think of anything.
Okay. Of course, I'm, you know, going to always be following up with code enforcement, and I will get that, Martine. I'll send you the link.
Great, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, all right. Anything else? Boy, this is a lot of work for everybody. I wish we could let them everybody know. You know, I do try to tell people what all is on your responsibility list before mayor and council starts adding. All right. Let's skip call to audience and item 10. Let's go to adjournment at 4:38. And happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween. See you next week.
Yeah, see you.
It's next Thursday.
Actually, there will be a notice of cancellation sent out on Friday. We will not have full ESAC next week.
Okay.
Everyone's out. Yeah, everyone, you know, I think Frank's out, Carlos is out. I have
a doctor's appointment.
And you,
Fred's out. A
doctor's appointment. Okay. We'll see you in November. All right. Take care.
Oh, Chris, don't forget to send me that neighborhood support network.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've got your email. Yeah. I'll try to, after I feed my dogs, they're circling me now. So
I know mine are kind of wandering around too. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Take care. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Bye.
Bye.